Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners are warned that the following podcast program may contain stories, names and voices of deceased persons.
This is Outback Out Loud.
People and stories from Outback New South Wales.
The most amazing little town there could ever be. I love it.
I left to come out west and I came out Jillaroo-ing at Warren. And from there, that's where I started my love affair again with the Western Plains, and I've never left Western Plains from there.
It's a great little spot to live.
You know, just everything about Louth I love.
Just home as far as I'm concerned.
Outback Out Loud!
That's what I like.
Welcome to Outback Out Loud.
In this season, we explore stories and life experiences from the most remote centres in New South Wales.
Let's hear from historian Dr. Mary-Anne Jebb about Quambone.
Just a quick word of warning that the final interview in this episode discusses suicide.
Quambone is a small rural village in outback New South Wales. The village and surrounding area have a population of about 250. It is nestled on the Merry Merry Creek at the junction of roads leading to Warren, Canamble and Corinda. The village lies at the southern end of the Macquarie Marshes, where the cleared agricultural lands give way to more open rangelands and semi-arid country. The climate is hot in summer and mild in winter, with low to moderate rainfall that can be unpredictable, sometimes bringing floods, but more often long dry spells. Quambone sits on Nyampa and Wailwan country. The name Quambone is derived from a Nyampa word meaning having blood. Today, Aboriginal communities in the Canamble and Quambone region maintain strong connections to country through cultural heritage, land management and community organisations. The open plains, seasonal creeks and the vast wetlands of the Macquarie Marshes were central to Indigenous cultural life, providing seasonal foods, fish, water birds, yabbies, emu, kangaroo, seeds and tubers, as well as spiritual sites linked to dreaming stories. Today, Quambone is the gateway to the marshes, recognised as a significant Australian colonial waterbird nesting site, covering over 200,000 hectares and listed under the Ramsar Convention of a wetland of international importance. The environment around Quambone also supports sheep and cattle grazing, with some cropping. Small farmlets exist near Quambone, though most of the land remains open pastoral country. Long distances between pastoral properties, the red and grey soils and wide open spaces give the landscape a sparsely populated outback character.
Hi, my name's Cheryl Delaney. Live in a small country town called Quambone. I was born in Grafton. Grew up in Bogan Gate in New South Wales. I got married at Tullamore and moved to Quambone. So I've been here for 50 years this November. After I left school, I moved to Trundle. That's where I had my first job. I worked in a greengrocer store for J.K. O'Keefe and Sons. Did some home care. Then moved from there to Tullamore. I got married. How do people normally hook up? The same way everyone hooks up.
Did you have a courting period where you go out to dances?
Yeah. He didn't like dancing, as most males didn't back in those years. We just used to do the normal things, hang out with the normal people, the same age people. And Parks was our closest town, which was 60 mile from Tullamore to Park, so that's where we go if we went to the pitches, or he had other family in Parks, and so yeah.
Do you have any memories of what movies that you went and saw?
Yes, I can tell you, The House on the Haunted Hill. That was one. Some Elvis movies and things like that, yep. Each town used to have their own dances and balls and things like that. Things of the past that they don't have anything like that anymore. We used to have, here in Quambone, we used to have a mock Deb ball where the guys would dress up as debutantes and get presented in the hall. They were absolutely fantastic nights.
So they would frock up?
Yep. Well, my son was in it 1 year. I made his dress out of a flannelette sheet and a lace curtain with a lump of number 8 wire or the blue in the bottom. Just anything to entertain.
And would they learn the dances and stuff?
No.
Of course not. It's just about dragging up and having a laugh.
Yeah. Used to put on like concerts. Here once upon a time, one particular concert we did was Oliver. It was pretty hilarious, but especially when you have people that don't know their right legs from their left legs when you're doing the can-can. Just fun, just to make life easier. Had 4 children, 2 boys and 2 girls. The oldest must be 55 this year. They've moved away, but then they've moved back to Cuomo. They've all taken up residency in Cuomo. I have my older son, he's just bought a house and renovated it. That's what I like to do, things like that, like renovate, just pull things apart and make things. We have a lot of city friends that come out and relatives, and they just can't believe how laid back it is and, you know, how much there is to do out here, like to go, to see, to do. You don't have to be bored just because you live out here.
My name is Carla. I'm 29 years old. I'm originally from Germany and I live in Quambone on a farm. I came to Australia at the start of 2018 and I wanted to extend my visa. So you need to do 3 months of farm work. And I just needed to find a farm as soon as possible because I was running out of time. And I said to my friend, the first ad that comes up on Facebook, that's where I'm gonna go. And the first ad that came up was in Quambone. So my back then boss is my now partner. And yeah, now we've got a family here together. When we first came here, I never Googled Quambone before because I'm like, I just need the farm days now. I just really needed them. I never Googled the place and never knew where I was really going to. And we drove into Quambone. I'm like, 88 days. That's all what I need to do here. And then, yeah, it was a bit of, I don't want to say a shock, but it's different. It's really different out here. You just don't have a lot of people out here. It's a really small town that you can easily walk around in 20 minutes and that's it. So it took a little bit of adjustment, but yeah, the people are lovely here. Took me a while to get to know some people, but yeah, it was really, really different to Brisbane where I used to live before. I grew up in, well, for Germany, a small village in Bavaria. We've got 130,000 people. So from the countryside where I grew up to the middle of the city centre, it's 10 km. We had our own little house, so it's mum, dad, 2 older sisters and me. We were always a really active family. Everyone was always doing sports and eventually we all ended up playing soccer. So my sisters played soccer. My mum was not a coach. She was more like the helping hand. When we were teenagers, they needed to have a woman on the team as well just to make sure that everyone's fine with a male coach. Dad used to be the coach of little boys. So yeah, weekends was usually always, we're just on the soccer ground. I did my school back home. I did an apprenticeship as a basically like daycare educator over there and loved going on holidays. Every single holidays we were somewhere else. We would travel around, you know, going to Italy for a holiday, going to Austria, to the Netherlands, Sweden, Denmark. We covered a fair bit with the family. After I finished my apprenticeship, I wanted to go overseas. I said to myself, my English was terrible. All the way through school, I really struggled with that. And I'm like, I just need to go to an English-speaking country. I didn't want to go to the UK because that was too close to home. So I started looking for families, like families that I could work as a nanny for, in Canada, New Zealand and Australia. And there was this lovely family in Brisbane that texted me. We were just messaging back and forth. And I'm like, I feel like that family would be a really good fit. And yeah, so it was the family that basically made the decision where I was going to. Before I came to Australia, I went to Japan for 2 weeks with a friend. So it was snowing and minus degrees over there. And then flying from Japan to Brisbane, arriving in Brisbane with 40 degrees, it was hot. It was really hot. It was really busy. And then obviously the language was a huge thing, because the German brain was definitely there. You know, it's like someone would say something to you in English and it's like, oh bugger, I need to translate that in my brain in German first, had to think about an answer and then translate it back. So it didn't just, you know, you couldn't just have a conversation how we have it now, because I was just not used to that. So that was, yeah, that took a little bit of time for the language to come through. But Brisbane was great. I met lots of lovely people there. You know, we would go on weekend trips together. I was always lucky that I could use a car on the weekend from the host family. So we were everywhere. From there, I went traveling first. So I did the East Coast with one of the girls that I met here. And then my sister and my baby nephew back then came over for a visit. I came out here 2018 to do my farm work. And that was, I think, 91 days before my visa finished. So I literally had to do it then.
What made you want to stay in Australia?
Love. Meeting someone over here wasn't the plan at all. But yeah, I met someone that seemed to work with. I said, oh, well, I'll just, you know, do my second farm work here as well, and I'll just stay and we just see how things go. So it was never the plan to stay. But yeah, it was love, and then I got pregnant. So the decision was sort of made. It's really nice. It's good. It's a nice little town, lots of space. The kids are growing up with all the machineries around them, learning how to ride a motorbike. We've got a drum set in the house that the kids just literally bang at 7 o'clock in the morning. There's no neighbor that complains about it. You've got space. And I reckon space is amazing, because me growing up, I would hear the neighbors flushing the toilet. So we are a patchwork family. So there's 3 boys. The oldest one is turning 11 really soon. The other one turned 9, and then the little one is turning 5. Seeing them growing up compared to my nephew and niece is, I can open the door, or they open the door, they go outside, they know the rules, where they're allowed to go and where they're not allowed to go outside. And if I'm not going to see them for half an hour, that's fine. Because if something happens, I know they come back screaming saying something happened. While my niece and my nephew, it doesn't work that way. Because if my sisters would open the door and just let them out, they probably would get run over by a car. They don't know how to ride a motorbike. They don't get to enjoy the, you know, riding in a buggy or driving a buggy. Well, all kids know how to drive a buggy. All kids know how to drive a tractor. It's skills that they learn out here, which I reckon is mind-blowing sometimes, because they just help. You know, we are outside, we're doing things outside. We go fencing, the kids come fencing too. They know how to put a fence up. They know how, if we need to mark lambs, they know how to mark lambs. And it's just, the kids get involved in our jobs as well. It's this weird little tiny town that I reckon I probably would have driven through travelling, because you drive in and you basically back out. But getting to know the people and knowing the places now, because I mean, well, we've got friends out here, you know, so we go to other farms as well, and you know, you go fishing and you just enjoy yourself, you just be outside. But yeah, I would recommend it. I definitely would. The marshes are not far away, and I mean, well, if someone likes birds, good for bird watching. But yeah, it's a nice little tiny town.
I'm Donna Hayden, and I'm the preschool teacher, and we're at the Quambone Public School. It was a great place to grow up. There were a lot of kids here then, so yeah, so it was a, I would say it was a fantastic place to grow up. There's nowhere near as many people in the town. So when I was growing up and when I was going to school here, I can't remember the amount of kids offhand, but like there was always other kids to play with. You know, we didn't have phones, so or social media, so we sort of made our own fun. Just hanging with the town kids, yabbing or fishing or listen to music, just kid stuff. So I went to high school in Coonamble. So I'd done school out here and then went to high school in Coonamble.
And when you got to the end of high school, like, how did you meet your partner?
He grew up out here. He grew up on a property just out of town. So I knew him through school anyway.
What attracted you to him?
He was just fun. He was fun. Yeah, we went to school together, so we knew each other. And then, you know, I'd done some cotton chipping out where he worked, and yeah, we just got talking and it just went from there. Went to uni later on in life after I had kids. I always wanted to do nursing, always. From a really young age, I wanted to do nursing. After I had kids, I actually went to work at an aged care facility first, and they were offering a scholarship for an endorsed enrolled nurse, which I'd done. My teacher for that, my TAFE teacher, she encouraged me to go on to uni and do nursing, so that's what I'd done. So I'd done my degree through Central Queensland University, and I did it half online and half on campus. I finished up nursing in 2014, I think. I don't think I've got a favourite place around here, but I think the sunsets out here, you know, or walking in the early morning with the sunrises, that's my favourite thing, I think, about this place. Not so much a favourite place. You know, at the moment it looks green, it looks beautiful at the moment because we've had rain, but generally, it's dry, hot summers. If you would ask me to describe it out here, the first thing I think of is dry, hot summers and dust storms. I've got family around here. We've moved away and come back and moved away and come back, but I think... Yeah, I think family draws us back here.
Donna certainly has her hands full with the preschool group at Quambone Public School.
You say, my name is Wyatt.
My name is Wyatt.
Well, my name is Mowgli. It's easy to say. It's easy. All you have to do is this, Mowgli. And then,
My name is Finn.
This one's for Evelyn. Evelyn, what is your favourite thing to do?
Play inside. Because there's books and stuff inside.
This is a question to all of you. What do you all like playing with each other?
Balls.
Well, tag.
Okay. Cars.
I like riding my motorbike.
but my mailbox broken.
That's bad.
What do you like colouring in?
Well, you see, police cars.
A unicorn?
Steve Hudson, and I live in Quambone. Yeah, if you pin the tail on the donkey, where you're supposed to pin it, that's where we are. I've been here off and on. I've been here 10 years this time. I wouldn't even say I'm a local. I'm probably too different to be accepted as a local, but I just got rallies here, but I don't have anything to do with them anyway, but I'm just here, you know, like it's old shack and it didn't cost much and got to be somewhere, I suppose. It's a much better place. I'd rather be somewhere on a nude beach or something, but there's plenty of sand here, but no surf.
tell me what you do.
I do stock work and that. I work on places and that, but I'm pretty lazy. I sort of try to get 3 days a week. And the boss always says, how come you don't want more work? And I said, well, why do you only work 3 days? I said, because I can't afford to only work two. So I've got to go 3 days at least. Yeah. I only got to work to feed me mongrel dogs. I got a heap of dogs. Yeah, and that's, if I didn't have them, I probably wouldn't have to work as much at all. Can't tell you how many I've got because I've got the disease, dog disease, and I train them and I love them and they keep me alive. I have a bit of bad luck a while ago and sort of say my dogs sort of keep me alive and I love them and I've got too many and I'm the first one to admit it. And yeah, I don't know what to say. Yeah, I try to only run a few at a time so no one knows how many I've got. Yeah, otherwise I'd probably get kicked out of town. People don't even like you having a rooster here because they're noisy. They're all trained to do stock work. I haven't got any pets. They're just all, you know, trained up to do stock. Sheep, mainly, because I muck around with sheep. Yeah, sheep work and that.
Someone was telling me you've got a lot of geese too.
I use the geese. I got pet geese and sheep. I live in town and in Struggle Street. And I got sheep and geese and runner ducks to train the dog on, depending on what dog it is or whatever. So I use all the animals to, train the dogs. That's the only reason I got all the pet geese and the sheep and the runner ducks there.
So how does that work?
The dogs got to have capability to be able to round up things, and depending on what dog it is and how much pressure it's got, whether I use runner ducks or sheep or whatever, just to practice to get them good at what I want them to do, sort of thing. Mm. The geese are quite tough and they sort of stick up for themselves, the geese. Yeah, they can be quite nasty. Like the ducks are probably a little bit more softer and a little bit weaker than that, but the geese, they're quite capable of sticking up for themselves. Yeah, they can probably more than the sheep, you know.
How do you know when a dog's trained or is it never end?
Oh, I sort of get to a stage where I'm happy with what they're at, you know. They've only got to do what you want them, like what work you want them to do. You know, whoever owns dogs, working dogs, they've only got to do what they want them to do. I get mine to do other things, but it's just me. Yeah, the idea is you've got to be in their head. Yeah, you've got to be in the dog's head. My theory is you've got to be able to make it do the opposite of what it wants to do, and then you're in its head enough. Like if the dog wants to go left, you've got to be able to send it right. If it wants to, whatever it wants to do, you've got to be in its head enough to make it do the opposite. That's, I might probably sound like a bit of a control freak, but you don't do that, but that's how I like to have it, yeah. Everyone else reckons mine are good, but I reckon they're naughty. They're all different. They've all got different temperaments. They've all got different natures. Some are easy going and easy to train, and others are real hard-headed. Yeah, each one, you just got to train them on their own merits. That's what I find anyway, you know, like, they think I'm Father Christmas. And I tell them all that I love them, but I only tell them when they're on their own.
Do you want to talk about your most terrible day?
The worst day in my life, I don't dwell on it or anything like that. I was a single dad for years and had my daughter from when she was in nappies and took her to school and done all the things that mums normally do, I suppose, and changed nappies and school lunches and took her to sport and everything. When she turned 27, she committed suicide, and life hasn't been the same, but you just got to keep on going. And when that happens, there's still things you got to do every day. There's only some things you have to do every day, and when you're down that far, you still got to do them things, and slowly, surely, you hear the clock ticking real loud inside where you normally wouldn't hear it, and everything's so quiet. You hear, yeah, anyway. Yeah, but there's some things you still got to do. You still got to get up. You still got to do things in life that you still got to do. Might be only a handful of things, and after you do them, well, the rest doesn't matter, as long as you do the things you got to do and look after the animals or your kids or your pets or pay your bills. And yeah, it's hard to overlook some things, but there's a lot more on your mind. But yeah, sometimes I have a bit of a cry with my dogs and whatever. I don't even know if they know what I'm thinking, but anyway. No, there's nothing. You know, just life keeps going, yeah. I'm in my bubble here. A bit like, I'm like in one of those things in the park, you know, those round things you get on and they spin around and they've got bars on them. You get on there, you know, and once it gets going too quick, well, you got to, you know, yeah, and life's like that. The world keeps spinning and you got to open the door and step out onto the hurdy-gurdy, don't you? And that's, it just keeps going flat out sometimes. The only place that's not spinning so quick for me these days is inside. The moment you step outside, the whole world is just spinning at that same ratio. It don't stop for you. It just keeps going. So you just got to sort of jump in there at the level you think that you can handle, you know?
If this interview has raised anything for you personally, please contact Lifeline on 13 11 14.
Thanks for listening. To hear more amazing stories from Outback New South Wales, check out the whole Outback Out Loud series, now streaming everywhere.
We acknowledge and celebrate the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet and work, and whose cultures are among the oldest continuing cultures in human history.
Please like, subscribe, rate us, and write a review. The Outback Out Loud podcast was designed and produced by Signal Creative.
Season 4 of Outback Out Loud has been made by Outback Arts. You can find Outback Arts at outbackarts.com.au or on Facebook and Instagram. This season was made possible with funding support from the Regional Arts Fund. On-ground support this season came from Marnie Vaughan and Andrew Hull. Outback Out Loud Season 4 was researched, consulted, recorded, and edited by Emma Hoy. Thank you to everyone who's been involved over the last 5 years.